Yo, yo, what is going on, you guys? It is your girl here, Simply T Double E Poetry, daughter of the late great James and of the living and giving Lisa L. And welcome to another episode of the Paradigm Shift Combo, a show created to spark interest and conversation on societal norms, and in most cases, challenges relevance and agenda. The idea of shifting the paradigm is considered rebellious or brash, but in the spoken word open mic communities in which I dwell, this disruption is not only common, but required. Hi, I'm Simply T Poetry, a combat veteran stumbling back into civilian life with a probationary opinion and a hand up tongue, excited to freely speak about whatever the hell I want. This is a paradigm shift combo.
Yo, yo, you guys, what is going on? It's your girl here, Simply T Double E Poetry, and it is yet another episode of the Paradigm Shift Convo, and I am excited about our guest this evening, you guys. As always, y'all know how I feel about veterans, and this gentleman is an Army veteran like myself, so that just puts me on a whole different level of excitement, because we can talk about some things and we can understand each other on a whole different type of level. But not only that, this gentleman is also a singer, director, composer, and a political activist. And y'all know, if y'all know me, I'm all about the politics and music and the industry. So putting all those things together as a veteran, I am just super elated to bring and introduce to you guys Mr. Aaron Myers. Thank you so much for being on the show today. We super appreciate it. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to hear about the show, and I'm glad that you decided to have me on.
Thank you so much. So, Mr. Myers, we want to get right into it and talk to the audience a little bit just about who Mr. Myers is and how you came into all that you do. So just give us a quick synopsis of your backstory.
Oh, I'm going to tell you, I'm a country boy at heart. I was born in Dallas, Texas, of course, and was raised in a sharecropping community about 60 miles south of Dallas. It was predominantly a black community.
Okay.
And from there, my family's been there in that county since about 1860, 1870, and deep roots in the community. And I believe my sense of community came from that very, very small town, Goodloe, at the time had a population of about 312. And so the idea of seeing a community that was poor, and it is poor, it's still there, but a community that really banded together around social issues to help one another, but a community that they did the best they could to support me and my craft by playing in church and supporting plays I would write and things of that nature. And I was able to take that sense of community with me as I went to the military, as I went and moved to Hollywood. I used to live off of Sunset Gardner, not too far from there.
Okay.
And then, of course, now that I'm in Washington, D.C. And so I try to use any platform that I have that if I'm on stage, I want to advocate for my audience on stage by providing a good performance, whether it's music, whether it's acting or whatever, but that I want to advocate for my audience off stage by using my craft to speak truth to people.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I appreciate that. I feel like as just an advocate and artist myself, it's just so important for us to constantly keep in touch with our roots and our culture and give back to those things who gave to us. And I feel like that's something that you also are very prominent in doing. So I salute you for that. Thank you so much for just being a part and keeping a part of the culture. I feel like so many times as a culture in general, it's either one of two things. Either we just leave it and don't ever look back, or we give back. And the ones that give back are the ones that truly thrive in their industries. So I'm super grateful for you and the way that you move in the industry.
Well, you know, I don't care where you come from, and I don't care the highest heights you may achieve. When they write your biography or your Wikipedia page, they're going to flip where you come from.
Right.
You will always be a product of your community. So if you grew up in the jungle, okay, if you come from the jungle, but you get your money real nice and well, but you tell everybody you're from Beverly Hills or you're from Baldwin Heights or Baldwin Hills, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
No, honey, you're from the jungle. And something within that jungle gave you the fight that you needed. If you're from the country, a small town, even if you're from a a big urban community or whatever, I guarantee you that something from your surroundings gave you the fight that you needed to attain what you have today.
Right. True indeed. So, absolutely. So, I want to get right into it.
And I'm black and proud. I'm proud to be black.
Yes, me too, right? I love it. I do it for the culture. I say that all the time. I do it for the culture. I say it to remind myself. So you were in the military. What did you go into the military and do?
Well, I joined the Army really because I needed to go to college. I wanted to go to schooling. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't afford it. And so I was 17. My mom signed the paperwork for me. And I was, at the time, it was called the 31 Fox. And that was a network switchboard operator. And then I also went into, became a 31 Rovio, which is radio telecommunications specialist.
Okay.
Both, of course, the 31 series at the time was Signal. So I was in the Signal Corps.
Okay, yeah, I'm Signal. Hey, to the Signal Corps.
There you go.
Yes.
There you go. I was at Fort Jackson, and then I was with the Fort Gordon.
Okay,
and
me
I was
too.
At Fort Gordon when we switched from analog to digital.
Digital,
while I was there.
Yes.
So I spent a majority of my time in the military just in training alone.
Nice. Yes, I spent a lot of time in training as well. Yeah. Okay. Okay, we got something in common.
In Augusta, Georgia.
Yes.
And learned about the world in Augusta, Georgia.
Yo, Augusta's real. I don't know how many people have ever been to Augusta, but it's a very small town, but it's real. It's a lot of stuff you can learn.
It's real.
There. It's real. It is real.
I was
real.
Told that if you jump off the highest building, you might sprain your ankle. But it's a
It is true. True indeed. So after you left the military, you found yourself in L.A. What possessed you, this country boy out of Dallas, to say, you know what, I'm going to head to L.A.?
Well, you know, I majored in college in theater and business. I've done music all of my life. I've been since I was three. And I had applied for an internship at the Radio and Television Museum of History in New York. And before I was going to do that internship, Christmas break was coming up, and I said, well, why don't I just try L.A. for Christmas break and see what it was like? And it was the first time in my life where I was able to be around so many like-minded people
Wow.
who could understand my language. Now, when I say this because as a creative, oftentimes you're trying to convince people that your ideas can become true. You're trying to often to convince people that the song that you're writing actually can resonate with some other people. Moving to L.A., I would speak a type of language that automatically was understood by other people. And then people were able to speak to me in a way and challenge my thinking in a creative way. And I almost didn't go back to college to finish the semester off because I wanted to just stay in Hollywood. Hollywood is one of the few places I have found that a simple trip to get coffee or to the mall or to grab food can literally end up with you with a record deal, with you
wow.
in the picture. I have been standing in the line with someone as you're making small talk. It can lead to a meeting, that can lead to an opportunity that can change your life. I never will forget when Fashion TV did their 10-year anniversary, and some guy I had talked to at a club, remember that I also played piano and could sing, and he asked me if I wanted to perform at the live telecast of Fashion Television, and they did it from the creator of Justin Jean. Justin Jean is the popular jean company years ago, and we did it from his home on his baby grand. While I had Miss California right next to me, and the other.
Wow.
I just thought about that for a moment. I said, you know, I woke up that morning, really just, you know, to go out, you know, have a good time, went out that evening, met a guy who remembered me, and all of a sudden, a week or two later, you know, I was being introduced to Prince Rudolph Tonight Melikov, if Armenia still had a reigning prince, a reigning royal family, he would be the reigning monarch. It's people like that you just randomly run into in L.A. And in that time, at that opportunity, either you could take the initiative and seize upon those moments, or you could actually let them pass you by. LA is a city where you are less likely to not seize upon opportunities when they come to you.
Right.
So LA attracted me. It's like a fly and those big old lights. You know, the fly and those big old lights. Mm-hmm. I was attracted right to it and got a taste of the air, and I said, I'm not going nowhere.
I definitely can understand that. I've spent some time just being in LA, and every time I'm here, I feel like I am running into people on accident. Like, that's what you do? That's what you do? And even though I'm not even technically in, like, the music industry, I've definitely made some connections with people in the music industry that I had no intentions of ever being able to connect with. And it's amazing. And it's just, I mean, if you don't do it, like, this is, if you can come to LA and not connect with people, then it's definitely not something you should try to invest in, because you're doing it wrong. Like, it's too easy for it to happen.
I tried to make every place I live, I tried to relate LA, and I've done this in Washington. I tried to do it in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Every place I live, I tried to relate it to that little small town. And so I knew that in that small town, I knew my neighbors. And so wherever I lived in LA, I knew all of my neighbors.
Wow.
And then I tried to exercise common decency. So in that small town, I will wave hello, I'll say hello, I'll say good morning. I did that there in Los Angeles too. But I also, in my small town, I tried to give not people the benefit of the doubt, but I wanted to see the best in other people. And when you're speaking to someone, before I wanted to know what they did for a living, I just wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt that they were a decent human being, you know? And if I give you the benefit of that doubt, you will prove me either right or wrong.
Facts.
I would not have to do that for you.
Facts.
And so I didn't have what one would call the most negative experience. Now, did I get the LA beat down like many other people? Yes, I surely did. LA will whoop your behind.
Right.
But in doing that, though, it didn't do it in a space where I was in the city, or some people leave LA and say they will never live there again. No, of course, I would love to live in Los Angeles again. If for my craft, it made the most sense. I think LA is a great place. I've met some, and I still have some great friends that I've created there. I think it's not impossible to create a family or friendship in Los Angeles if you want to have one.
Absolutely.
Usually the people, I'm not sure if we can swear, this belongs to going without swearing, but I am not sure. When I talk to people, and people say, oh, you know, there are no nice or genuine people in Los Angeles, usually those people who are speaking are not genuine themselves.
That part.
Like attracts like.
That part. You're preaching now, so, Mr. Myers. Be careful.
I am really attracted, and I've met some fantastic people. When I meet people in L.A., and I see people, or my friends live there and move there, and I'm like, well, how are things going? And they're like, oh, ABCD. I'm like, okay, now how are things really going? Be real with me, because L.A. can throw you some curveballs, but it doesn't mean you have to give up, or does that mean you're being defeated? It means that you're being challenged in your industry, and if you really want to do this, challenges should be welcome.
Woke up this morning feeling some type of way. I could hardly believe it that I'd stay another day. I've been so sick and tired of us stopping and starting again. It seems like after this long, our fighting just all to end. Now I have decided to do what's best for me and you. And this time it's final, there's nothing left to lose. I've got my bag packed, they're sitting right by the door. I'm tired of the shape we're in, I don't want to fight you anymore. There's too much happiness and too much joy left to explore. I'm gonna pack up my bags, I'm gonna walk right out that door. Don't try to change my mind this time, we both need to be real. Cause for far too long now, we're not saying what we feel. You know that I loved you, but this time can't be replaced. Looks like we're going nowhere, and this you must embrace. Know that at this time. Our past must stay in the past. There's no second chances, 'cause you know they just won't last. I've got my backpack, they're sitting right by the door. I'm tired of the shape we're in. I don't wanna fight you anymore. There's too much happiness and too much joy left to explore. I'm gonna pack up my bags, I'm gonna walk right out that door. Shape we're in, I don't wanna fight you anymore. There's too much happiness and too much joy left to explore. I'm gonna pack up my bags, I'm gonna walk right out that door. I've got my bags packed and sitting right by that door. Baby, don't try to stop me, I don't wanna stay here anymore. Please just believe me, I'm doing what's best for you and me. It's time for you to be you, and it's time for me to be free. I've got my backpack. I've got my backpack. Calling Greyhound, American, Southwest. I gotta take the jet plane and get the hell up out of here.
So let's talk about how you moved into comedy. I heard you was doing comedy at some point. What was that about? I feel like comedy is like the hardest thing. I am an artist, and I tell people all the time how I feel like comedy is the hardest thing to do on a microphone. You can sing, you can rap. I do poetry, and poetry is difficult, but comedy is so much harder. I feel like anybody who can capture an audience through comedy is like the real VIP. So how was that for you? How did that come about?
Well, I'm going to tell you, comedy for me goes all the way back to I Love Lucy.
Growing up, I would
go to my grandparents' house, and in the early morning, especially during the summer, they used to have the reruns of several shows. I Love Lucy, Father Knows Best, My Three Sons, the Donna Reed Show. I mean, all of these old sitcoms. But Lucy gave me an example of what show business was like, and it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I think any great comedian, and any comedian, any comedian, it's my desire when I look at comedy, I'm easily entertained. I love to laugh.
Right.
I love it when my friends crack me up.
Right.
And I want other people to experience that same form of comedy, you know, to see what it's like to just bust out in laughter,
right,
or in joy, especially when you're going through a bunch of crap, you know.
Absolutely.
And so when I got to Hollywood after doing that winter break, it was very apparent to me that trying to do theater in L.A. was going to be difficult, because L.A. is not really a theater town. There is theater to perform in L.A., but L.A. is not known for, you know, its theater.
Right. Of course,
the capacity, the playhouse, and things of that nature.
Right.
But it's not New York.
Right.
And so, and with everyone, you can throw a dead cat and hit 18 artists who want to act. So I said, well, how can I guarantee that I could be on stage? Well, stand-up was a way that if I went to the Comedy Store on Sunday and Monday and put my name on a list and got chosen, I could at least once or twice a week be on stage for at least 3 minutes.
Hmm.
But then I realized in L.A., there used to be a website called Funky Monkey in L.A. years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is when MySpace was around. And it gave all the spots that did comedy. And there was about 40 places, coffee shops, restaurants, who did live comedy. So if you work in Hustlers, you could be on stage up to 4 or 5 nights a week, at least getting a minimum of 3, maximum of 10 minutes that you can work out your material. And it was a way for me to always be on stage and to be doing it. And it was an invaluable class for me to take, because I was surrounded by some fantastic comedians. I got to listen and watch Tony Rock. I remember Rodney Perry called me and would try to mentor and help me when I was at the comedy store. Beautiful. And what I've been able to do when I do my live shows as a jazz artist, comedy is incorporated. I did about a 20-minute set Friday night at my jazz show. And it was fun. It's fun to incorporate that. And if you think about it, especially the black artists and entertainers of old that laid the groundwork for what we do, they were musicians. They could sing a little bit. They could dance a little bit. They could do jokes.
Right.
They could act. They could entertain, and they enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
And so that's what I'll try to model myself after.
Awesome. Yes, I think that, and I was just having this conversation about how I feel like artists or actors back in the day were like so intricate and fold. Like they had so many different pockets of talent to pick from. You know, they were singers, they were dancers, you know, they were comedians, you know, like it was just so much. And it was like, but at the end of the day, they just consider themselves an actor. But on top of all of that was acting for them was just so many things that they were able to maneuver through, which made them amazing actors in the process. So I definitely understand that mentality. I don't feel like it's so prominent in today's society, although I do feel like if you do theater, you do get more talent in a person. But not so much as acting. Like, people just are good on screen as opposed to just having all those talents just able to pick from. So I commend you for, I guess, just studying the craft and studying your art.
You have to love it. I mean, I don't know what else I'd be doing if I wasn't entertaining. I just don't know. And when you do this, you have to also accept, which is a hard truth, and people don't like to hear it. You can go your entire life doing music and never sell out an audience or a venue or win a Grammy or win an award.
Right.
You can act in so many films and never be recognized. You can do comedy but never get the big comedy special. It's related to painters. You know, the worth of a painting goes up after the artist dies. And you have to be okay with, you love to do this because you love to do it. And you may not get a certain type of recognition. And if you need that recognition to validate who you are, for you to do this work, I suggest you find another profession. It's nice to hear thank you, and it's nice to hear an applause. I mean, we're all a narcissist to a little bit. You know, I'm a
Leo.
So having an audience clap for me is everything a Leo needs. You know, me being able to put on a nice suit, a nice blazer, and get on stage and have about 1,000 people looking at me. That's a fantastic feeling as a Leo. But even if there's an audience of 3, I would need them. I can entertain in my living room. I can entertain at dinner because it's something I just love to do. And I'm fascinated by people who can tell a story in a certain way that it captivates a listener. Or who could sing a song ever so simply, and it just stays in your heart during your mind. That captivates me, and I'm just intrigued by it.
So speaking of you being a Leo and Leo rising, you had a song called My Funny Valentine on the Leo Rising album. Talk to me about how that came about.
I recorded Leo Rising in one day at Avatar Studios in New York. And My Funny Valentine was a song that piano player that played with me before his wife asked me to sing years and years and years ago. And I used to laugh at the song because the lyrics say, you know, is your featureless in Greek? Is your mouth a little weak? And when you open it to speak, are you smart? And I thought, this is not words or phrase that would turn anybody on. If anybody came up to me and talked about, is your body left in Greek, I would walk away. Like, you're not going to get anything from me. But then after seeing my grandparents, being married for 71 years.
Mm-hmm.
The next line simply says, but don't change what happened for me, now that you care for me.
Mm-hmm.
And there will come a time in our lives when we are not going to be as attractive outwardly as we feel inwardly. And it would be nice when you're 80 to have someone look at you and still think you're sexy.
Right.
And think that you're hot. And for me, that's what I hope my Valentine will not be. Somebody who can look at me, regardless of how unattractive or how low I may be in that moment, but would ask not to change, would love me. And so I kind of love it. I put a little groove on it, and I did, and I liked the song.
Yo, that's beautiful. That's powerful. Love is everything. And in the spirit of it being February and Valentine's Day, we're gonna listen to it. I definitely want to play it. So you guys take a listen in to Mr. Aaron Myers on My Funny Valentine. Y'all listen in.
My Funny Valentine. Sweet comic Valentine. Make me smile with my heart, with my heart. Your looks are laughable, unphotographable. Yet you're my favorite work of art. Your figure less than green, and is your smile a little weak? And when you open it to speak, are you smart? If you care for me, stay, little Valentine, stay. Each day is Valentine's Day. Funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine. You make me smile, 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 smile. With my heart, with my heart. Your looks are laughable, unphotographable, yet you're my favorite, favorite work of art. Now is your figure, is it less than Greek? And is your smile, is it a little weak? And when you open it to speak, are you smart? Don't change one half of me. Not, 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 if you care for me. Ooh. Stay, little Valentine. Stay. Each day is Valentine's. Each day is Valentine's Day. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Today is Valentine's Day. Thank you, Mr. Aaron Myers. That was absolutely an amazing track. Got me wanting to have Valentine's Day every single day, every day of the week. That's such a dope track.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you. Got me wanting to be in love all the time.
I'm still looking for my first wife.
You know what I'm saying? Like, where's she at?
I'm going to find her.
That's
beautiful.
I'm gonna settle down on the third one, but we'll have fun with one and two. That is beautiful. Like, I'm like always a fan of just songwriters in general. I just feel like you all have a level of connection with life that we as regular people don't even realize is a thing. And you all have the ability to just take so much information and put it in 3 minutes. You know what I mean? And then put music behind it. And I'm just a poet. Like, 3 minutes and 10 seconds is what we use to kind of like convey a story. But by no means would I ever imagine being able to compose one of my poems. And as songwriters, you all are just amazing at it. And I just salute you every time because it's such a great talent. So, and that song is dope. That's just dope. It makes me want to be in love. And that's special for me because I'm not the type. So you definitely are good at what you do, sir.
Well, I thank you very much. As a poet, I'm sure you can write a couple of love poems and knock your people, you know, socks off in the sand, or whatever you want to come off in the sand. I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Like, I have no problems with just like speaking, but I'm telling you, like, I'm pretty sure I'm not. I don't know. I haven't been diagnosed. I'm pretty sure I'm tone deaf. I just don't know music well. Like, I just don't have that in me. So to be able to do the words and the music, I just feel like is a special person. But anytime, like, people can do things that I can't do, I feel like is just a dope talent.
I admire people who can draw because my drawing is hard.
Right.
So
like,
a lot of people who can actually draw, I can do a mean stick figure.
Right.
I can get a job doing bathrooms and things like that.
Right.
I can put that stuff together. You know, crosswalks, I got you. But like, if you want me to draw a picture of somebody, it's not going to look
good. It is not even. Exactly. So you feel me. Like, I'm just one of those people who can really appreciate the things that people can do that I can't. Because I'm like, I have no idea how you created that.
Right.
So, yeah, that's exactly where I am with songwriters. But you are more than just a songwriter, sir. You have actually moved into political activism. Word on the street is there was a point in time where you actually ran for office. back in the day. Let's talk about it.
I just got out of the military, and I have to predicate that by saying, I grew up with a family that believed in community action.
Mm-hmm.
So, my cousin was the president of the NAACP. My mom was secretary. My great grandfather donated the land for the church and the cemetery. Like, my whole life, I've been surrounded by people who wholeheartedly did not believe in you complaining.
Right.
And you had no initiative to fix whatever problem you were complaining about. There's no problem so big that you can complain only without being a part of some type of a solution.
Well, that's a blessing that you have that.
And so it was not tolerated in the household I grew up in, my grandparents' household,
nice.
To sit around and have, debates. We would have debates around the table. But the question I always went down was, what are you going to do about it?
Wow.
What can be done about it? And so when I got out of the military and I went back to college, of course, the county tech is where I was going to college and I lived, which is our county seat. The mayor had resigned, and two city council people had been recalled, and the city manager had been fired.
Oh, wow.
And so I thought to myself, well, I sure can't do no worse than what y'all doing. And so I got all of my college friends together. I, put a huge push to get people to register to vote. And I never forget, the debate, they didn't have any debate. They had forums. But the forums that we had, my case was the most sound. In one forum, one gentleman got up and said, he was a class of 1960, whatever, and this other guy lived in Corsicana for 40 years or whatever. And I was like, my family's been in this community since 1850. So let's put our dicks away here, okay, to do that possibly, and quit doing the measuring, and let's go ahead and get down to brass tacks. I lost that election. And in that election, I saw three things. A, that you have to understand that if you lose an election, you have not completely lost an election because some of your initiatives got passed.
Hmm.
And there was some of my initiatives that were not shared by my other opponents that were actually implemented. You're also not wrong if you've not lost if your forecast was accurate, which means if you stated the reason why you should elect me is because I recognize these problems, and if these certain problems are not addressed, something, this action will happen, a consequence will happen. And I accurately forecasted a few things, which meant that I tried to alert my community.
Right.
But lastly, you have not lost, in a sense, if you, if you don't care, because you're not in the race to begin with. Losing sucks. Don't let nobody tell you anything different.
Right.
Absolutely sucks.
Facts.
It is the worst feeling that anybody can, and we did our best, ran our best. And we did. We had a good campaign. It was a clean campaign. They tried to malign me and talk about me and this, that, and the other. Did so many interviews. But it sucks to lose. It sucks to lose. But what losing can't be is that you have got to recognize the things it will take to win. And if the things it will take to win will compromise your character, then you need to figure out how to win another way.
Come on, sir.
But if what it takes to win is only an inconvenience to you, which means you might need to knock on more doors, be put in more uncomfortable situations, do more research, sleep only an hour a night, then you don't want it enough because you're not willing to do that work.
Right.
And so what we did here, what I've done since then, I've run for other offices, but usually within our organization. And then what we've done here in Washington, we were able to assess some problems that we saw within the community at large, specifically within the music community and the art community, and propose some solutions. And as that many artists I know who can say, there was a bill practically written in your living room and an idea you pushed for 2 years that now is law on the book. I noticed that in Washington, as it is in many cities, there's always a guess in the park, a ballpark guess about how many artists are in a city.
Right.
And we were told there are about 300 artists full-time in Washington. I stated, along with my friend Herb Scott, that, you know, there has to be more than 300 artists. We need to have a census.
Hmm.
And we discovered there was closer to 3,000 artists.
Right.
And so we've had ideas for solutions. We've also had to compromise. You know, we've also had to figure out how can you tell that you have moved the ball down the field. You know, sometimes it doesn't call you to do a Hail Mary. Sometimes you got to realize that we just need to advance a couple of yards at a time. We will still hit the goal line if we stay at that course, but everything doesn't require a Hail Mary.
Volunteering to help people in need is a noble gesture. Volunteering to lay down your life for your country is a sacrifice that can never be repaid. In an effort to keep my fellow veterans connected to society and each other, this is VetNet.
Did you know women veterans are 2 times more likely to develop PTSD than men? This alarming statistic and personal experience compelled Tanya and Sherelle into action. Familiar with trauma as combat veterans themselves, and inequity as African-American women, they founded the Vet Space, a nonprofit organization that is committed to supporting the wellness of women veterans. Tanya and Sherelle have over 40 years of combined experience and training that is necessary to provide A-plus service to women veterans associated with post-traumatic stress disorder, military sexual trauma, and other traumatic experiences. The Vet Space provides support that increases veteran productivity while reducing their feelings of isolation and helps them thrive. Through mindful techniques such as yoga and meditation, they reduce the symptoms of stress that women veterans experience, thereby increasing their sense of well-being and purpose. To know more about the Vet Space, all you have to do is go to thevetspace.com. That's the, like beginning of every sentence, vet, like where you take your fur babies when they're sick, and space, as in out of this world.com to know more. Thevetspace.com. Thank you so much to the Vet Space for putting military families and veterans first. Veterans, let's stay connected.
As a poet, like, one of the things that I love about poetry and one of the things that I advocate for as a poet is that I feel like a lot of people move into poetry as an outlet, but I feel like a lot of poets are politicians and domestic violence advocates, you know, but poetry is just a very easy way of a platform to use to kind of, like, get your point across, you know what I mean? But I definitely feel you on that aspect, because we don't have to worry about the luxury. Like, we don't care. Like, that's the best part about being a poet, right? Is, like, we're just very liberals in our conversation. And so people love us because we get to speak the truth and we are unfiltered. And, you know, it's one of those things.
I was going to say, you do, like, as a poet, I mean, the United States has a poet laureate.
Right. And every state has one.
The laureate acts almost as the conscience of a nation and the poet. I mean, the conscience of our society are poets.
Right. Thank you.
You know, so it's such an important, it's almost as if I meet people who are poets, who are artists, and I think about when I was talking to the vice president of diversity for Twitter. And she and I were talking at Congressional Black Caucus last year.
Wow.
And I was asking her, as someone who is the person, and as a black woman, who's in charge, or was in charge, at least, of diversity at Twitter, what can I do as someone who, as a jazz artist, my audience more than likely will be comprised of thought leaders, art appreciators, and people who have money, CEOs. But what can I do, or what song can I sing that might be able to have that CEO leave my show and say, well, maybe I should hire more black women.
Right.
What can I do? What can I do? What language can I use to make a lawmaker or someone say, you know what? There's someone who's marginalized that I'm not reaching out to that I can include. I can take off the margin. And so there's a lot of power you have. Music and poetry defines the most important part of our lives. Okay? When you get married, when you graduate, when you're in high school, you have your first layer, when you die, when you're trying to express to someone either your condolences or your love, you buy a card with a poem. You know, there's a lot of power that we hold as artists. I think it's important that we're aware of that power and know where do we feel comfortable using that power. And then once we find that space, hunkering down and doing it and owning that space.
Absolutely.
And knowing that in the future, you can say, my art was a part of the solution.
Right. That's so true. That's so true. You have, I feel like you have embodied all of those things. And again, I commend you because as an artist, as a creative, being able to connect with someone of your caliber who has just maneuvered and conquered so many aspects of industries, not just one industry, but different industries, from being a veteran to moving into the music industry and even possessing the political activism and getting whole bills passed for the sake of music is just dynamic in itself. And it is not something that people are doing on a regular basis. And I feel like you are one of the pioneers into making those things happen for the sake of the culture, for the sake of industry. And just like you said, from the 300 to the 3,000, being able to really be noticed and notified. So I want to thank you as a person, as a black woman, being in the culture, as an artist, as a creative, and I want to personally give you the all shift salute for here at the Paradigm Shift Convo for shifting the paradigm and changing the way people think, live, and move on a daily basis. We are super grateful. And before we get out of here, I definitely want you to talk to the audience and give them a sense of how they can get into all things that are Mr. Aaron Myers. So let us know how to get in contact with you.
Oh, absolutely. Go to my website, aaron2.me. That's Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, the number 2.me. You can look at my social media, Aaron Myers, A-A-R-O-N-M-Y-E-R-S, on Twitter, or Aaron L. Myers on Instagram.
Nice.
Follow me there. If you follow me and I'm paying attention to it, I'll follow you back. Likewise on Instagram. I just think it's... I love to talk to a good audience.
Nice.
If I'm coming to your city, I like to meet up with you, grab lunch or whatever. I remember the first time I did a show in New York, I reached out on LinkedIn and asked everyone that I knew on LinkedIn to say, meet me at this restaurant. And about 14 or 15 people met me there. And it was a great thing. So I like to meet new people. I believe the whole point is expanding your network and realizing and forcing yourself to realize that the world is smaller than we think.
Right.
The more people we're connected to.
Right. Thank you so much, Mr. Aaron Myers, teaching us about the 7 degrees of separation could actually be shorter than that. So thank you so much for being a part of the Paradigm Shift Convo. I absolutely salute you. I am grateful for the man that you are, and I look forward to all things that I'm Mr. Aaron Myers, you guys. Thank you so much for listening to another episode. It is the Paradigm Shift.
Back in the day, wooden soapboxes were used as platforms for orators to speak to the masses. And now, these speakers are known as slammers, spoken word artists, poets, exposing divisive culture and their souls 3 minutes at a time. And this segment is my modern-day wooden platform, so listen carefully. as a new artist takes the stage, and I bring you today's 90 Second Soapbox.
Hey, y'all. I am Queen E, and this is a snippet from my piece entitled King. Did you know that this world has been misleading? Did you know that you do not deserve to die in the streets, left there cold, left there bleeding? Did you know that you are not a thug? You are not a villain. You are not some bad guy like they said from that helicopter in the sky when you had your hands held high, yet and still you die? But did you know that you are not who they say that you are? You are not a weapon of mass destruction. You are not this image that the world has constructed. You are our fathers. You are our husbands. You are our sons. You are our brothers. So right now, right here, we're going to disregard who they say that you are. And I'll ask you, do you know who you are? Do you know who you were born to be? Well, listen up, brothers. Let me tell you who and what I see. I see royalty. And not that you come from royalty, not who your ancestors were, but that you, yes, you are royalty. You were born with something special within. You, my brother, are a king amongst men. So hold your head high, king. Proudly wear your crown. And know that I love you with a love that knows no bounds, because you are truly a king amongst men. I am Queen E, and when she speaks, you listen. You can follow me on Instagram at Queen E Speaks. That's QUEENESPEAKS, or on Facebook under my government name, Erica Garrett. That's ERICAGARRETT. Again, I am Queen E, and when she speaks, you listen.
So this concludes another episode of the Paradigm Shift Convo. We are here every single Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific and 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For everything Simply Tea and to get previews to upcoming shows, visit simplyteepoetry.com. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you. This is your girl, Simply Tea, Double E Poetry. Y'all know what to do. Get at me. Let go.